Welcome to my share. Thank you to Cecile and Ed Gromis for sponsoring this share in memory of Cecile's father, Irving Zilberschmitz. Yitzchok ben Avram Abba Zichron Lebrachos Yahrzeit is on the 5th of Nisan. May his neshama have an aliyah, and may we all be zoicha to see Tchias HaMesim. Today, I'm going to focus on a fundamental aspect of the Seder, the Arba Kosos, the four cups. Everybody who has ever been to Seder on the first night of Pesach, and outside Israel on the second night of Pesach as well, knows that there is a custom, a rule, an obligation of drinking four cups of wine during the Seder, which is, it's a fundamental part of the set structure for the evening. Now the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, Perek Yud Mishnah Aleph, explicitly mandates the drinking of four cups of wine during the Seder. Actually, it specifies that even the poorest person, someone who has no money for anything, must not have less than four cups of wine at the Seder. And if they don't have enough money to buy wine for the four cups, then it is the community's responsibility to ensure that they have the wine for Seder. I'm not aware of any other mitzvah where it is the responsibility of the community to ensure that someone who can't afford to pay for it has to be provided with it. For example, there's no obligation for the community to provide a poor person with matzah and maror, or with a lulav and estrig, or with tzitzis. What is so special about this mitzvah of four cups of wine, of the Arba Kosos at the Seder night, that it requires this level of social involvement? I'd like to look into this remarkable obligation of drinking four cups of wine, an obligation that has no explicit source in the Torah, unlike Korban Pesach and Matzah and Morah, which are explicitly mandated by the Torah. And yet, four cups of wine at the Seder is such a critical mitzvah, it's such a crucial obligation that we must not only make sure we do it ourselves, but we have to ensure that everyone we know can do it as well. First and foremost, let's take a look at what the Gemara says. In Maseches Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yud Ches, Omid Aleph, and then Omid Beis, the Gemara explains that the obligation to have four cups of wine is rooted in the Exodus narrative, specifically in Shmos Perek Vav, where God articulates the promise of redemption to the Israelites, the Jewish people in Egypt, through four distinct expressions. V'hoitzesi, and I will bring you out from the burdens of Egypt. V'hitzalti, and I will deliver you from bondage. V'ga'alti, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. And finally, v'lokachti, and I will take you to me for a people. I'm going to make you my people, and I will be your God. These expressions symbolize the four stages of the Jewish people's deliverance from slavery to freedom and their establishment as a nation under God. The four cups of wine at the Seder are consumed as a form of four-stage commemoration and reenactment of these divine promises of salvation, each cup representing one of the expressions, which are each a step along the way from the lowest point to the highest point. The Gemara specifies that the minimum amount of wine that must be consumed for each of the four cups to fulfill the obligation is a revi'is. That's the name of the measure of volume. It's equivalent to approximately 3.3 to 3.9 ounces, or about 98 to 115 milliliters. The Gemara does not mandate a specific type of wine that we need to use, but it does discuss preferences regarding the color and quality of the wine. Red wine, for example, is preferred as it symbolizes the blood of the Passover sacrifices and the redemption. However, the primary concern is that the wine be of a quality that brings joy to fulfill the commandment to rejoice during the festival. As to one's posture while drinking the wine, we need to be reclining. This is to symbolize freedom and the luxury of the free. The reclining posture reflects the relaxed manner in which free people would dine in ancient times. In contrast to the slave experience in Egypt, when they were slaves, the Jewish people had to eat while they were working, and they had to eat in a hurry. The points at the Seder when we drink the wine are as follows. The first one coincides with Kiddush at the launch of the Seder. The second cup of wine is drunk at the conclusion of the Haggadah, before we wash our hands for Hamotzi. The third one is the accompanying cup of wine for Birkas HaMazon, for benching. And the fourth cup of wine is drunk at the end of Hallel. One of the earliest Perushim commentaries on the Haggadah was written by a rabbi called Rav Yitzchok ben Shlomo ibn al-Achdov. It's called Pesach Doiros, Passover for the generations. Rav Yitzchok ben Shlomo ibn al-Achdov was from Castile in Spain. He was born in 1350 and he was a student of Rav Yehuda ben Osher, a great-grandson of the Rosh, of Rabbeinu Osher. After the anti-Semitic massacres in Spain during the 1390s, he fled to Sicily, where he died in 1426. Rav Yitzchok ibn al-Achdov has a good question about the four cups of wine. Two of the cups, he says, are not actually unique to Seder night. The first one is for Kiddush, and the third one is for Birkas HaMazon. In which case, how do these two cups of wine count towards the total of four if we have to have them anyway? His answer is straightforward. For Kiddush, on a regular Shabbos or Yom Tov, you should use wine. But if you want to, you can actually make Kiddush on bread, on the challah. That's the halacha, but not on Seder night. On Seder night, you have to make Kiddush on wine. Similarly, when it comes to Birkas HaMazon, you can accompany Birkas HaMazon, benching, with a cup of wine or not. In fact, most people don't have a cup of wine with their benching. But on Seder night, it's different. You have to accompany Birkas HaMazon with a cup of wine. And that's how the obligation to have four cups of wine at Seder night includes two cups of wine that we might have had anyway. The Sh'iltos writes that the obligation to have four cups of wine at the Seder is actually a Torah-mandated requirement. In other words, it's midoraisa. He derives this idea from a Gemara in the Yerushalmi. I'll get to that in a minute. But first, a few words about the Sh'iltoister of Achai Goin. It is one of the earliest works of halachic literature from the post-Talmudic period. It is attributed to Rav Achai Goin, who lived in the 8th century in Babylonia. The Sh'iltos is a very significant work because it predates the major codes of Jewish law, like Rambam's Mishneh Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, offering us a glimpse into the practices and halachic positions of the Gaonic period. The Sh'iltos is organized according to the weekly Torah portions, and it addresses various halachic questions, hence the name Sh'iltos. It also addresses a variety of issues derived from the Torah reading of that week. This piece about the four cups of wine at Seder can be found in the Sh'iltos on Parshas Tzav. Apparently, Rav Achai Goin had a girsa, a text in the Yerushalmi that reads, Minayin la'arba koisos min ha-Torah. How do we know that the four cups are a Torah-mandated requirement? Which led him to conclude that the four expressions of redemption are actually reference to a direct obligation for us to drink four cups of wine at the Seder. It's in the Torah. But the broadly accepted opinion is that the four cups obligation is a rabbinic requirement, derabbanan, and not a Torah obligation, based on the Gemara in Talmud Bavli, Psochim, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, Amud Beis, where it says explicitly, Arba koisos tiknu rabbanan. The four cups obligation was ordered by the rabbis. In fact, it is regarding this associative mitzvah, namely a rabbinic law that bases itself on a scriptural reference, it's known as an asmachta, that the Ritva explains what an asmachta actually is. He says, and this is the direct quote, whenever something we do is based on an asmachta from a pasuk, that means that God indicated to us that this is something worthwhile doing, but he didn't set it up as a Torah obligation. Which raises the question, when exactly did this obligation emerge? When was the first time that people drank four cups of wine at their Seder? It's a good question, right? According to a famous and quite controversial Sfas Emes, The first time anyone had four cups of wine at a Seder, at least as an obligation, was after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which means that before the temple was destroyed, the obligations of Seder night were Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. But when the temple was no longer in existence and the Jewish people were dispersed with no temple service, Chazal stepped in and established the requirement of having four cups of wine at the Seder, which they associated with the four expressions of redemption found in the Psukim that we mentioned earlier. To be clear, Rav Yitzchak ibn al-Achdav in Pesach Doiris disagrees with the Sfas Emes. According to him, it was none other than Moshe Rabbeinu who set up the requirement of four cups of wine to accompany Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, in keeping with his opinion that takonos attributed to Rabbonon, generically, without a particular name like Hillel or Rabban Gamliel, all originate with the Zakenim at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's who Rabbonon is. Maharil Diskin claims that the custom for wine at the Seder predates even Yetzias Mitzrayim and Moshe Rabbeinu. According to him, it started when Yaakov Avinu was blessed by his father Yitzchak. As the Pasuk says, Vayigash lo vayochel, vayaveh lo yayin, vayesht, he came close to him and ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. Rashi says there, on that Pasuk, quoting Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, that it was Pesach night that night. It was Seder night. According to Maharil Diskin, this Pasuk is referring to bread and wine, matzah and wine, two items that had not been requested by Yitzchak. And therefore, this shows that he had matzah and drank wine at this, as it were, prototype Seder night. And it's worth noting that the Ramban says that Yitzchak blessed Yaakov that day. What was the blessing? That one day in the future, his descendants would drink four cups of wine at the Seder. Amazing. So, as we can see, drinking four cups of wine, in the view of everyone we have quoted, is a critical component of the Seder. Although, people might not think so because it's not specifically mentioned in the Torah, or because they think it's just a rabbinic decree, it's Drabonon. And wine is expensive, unlike matzah and maror, or at least those two items shouldn't be so expensive. But either way, Chazal wanted to ensure that the obligation to drink wine wouldn't somehow fall by the wayside after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash as the generations unfolded, eclipsed by matzah and by maror, which are specified as obligatory by the Torah. So they insisted that the community ensure that even those who can't afford wine will be provided with wine for the Seder, enough for four cups. As I have mentioned a few times, the common understanding of why we have four cups of wine at the Seder is drawn from the quartet of expressions of redemption said by God to Moshe early on in his challenging mission to free the Jewish people from slavery. These assurances, these expressions, symbolize the stages of liberation and divine promise. But the Talmud and various Midrashim offer alternative readings and interpretations. Let's take a look at another interpretation and explanation found in the Talmud regarding the obligation of the four cups at the Seder. Rabbi Shua ben Levi, or some say it's Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman, links the four cups to the narrative of Pharaoh's butler, the Sar HaMashkim, as recounted at the end of Sefer Bereishis in the story about Joseph. The butler's dream featured the word kois, cup, four times. And, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, this is why we drink four cups of wine at the Seder. Weird, no? The story about the butler seemingly has little direct connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi talking about? The answer is, this dream precipitates a series of events leading from Joseph's imprisonment to his ascent to Egyptian power. But this chain of events, while showcasing Joseph's rise, also subtly begins to cast doubt on the nature of freedom and power for a foreigner in a foreign land. Joseph, initially integrating into Egyptian society, names his sons in a manner that reflects an evolving perspective on his status and identity in Egypt. He gives his eldest son the name Manasseh, which translates to, God has caused me to forget all my toil and my father's house. The adversities of his younger days, the discord with his siblings, and the ambitions that had once stirred such terrible jealousy are all left behind with the birth of his eldest child. In Egypt, Joseph adopts a new identity, complete with a local name, a local wife, and a position of power within a dominant civilization of that era. Then, for his second son, Joseph selects the name Ephraim, signifying, so it says in the Pasuk, that God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. This choice of name prompts the question, why does he refer to Egypt as Eretz Onyi, a place of suffering? Is this reference to his past hardships and imprisonment, or is it indicative of a shifting perspective towards Egypt? Despite his elevated status, does Joseph sense some kind of captivity in this land that saw his rise to prominence? This rephrasing indicated the essence of Joseph's journey and internal conflict, while reframing his narrative to explore the complexity of his personal identity and his feelings towards Egypt. The narrative arc from Joseph's initial success to his eventual request, he asked that his bones be carried out of Egypt by the Jewish people when they eventually left. It signals a deep understanding of the ephemeral nature of power and belonging in a land that isn't yours. Despite the outward appearances of integration and success, the truth is, even for Joseph, there is an inherent alienation, which is a kind of slavery, highlighting a distinction between being physically unchained and truly free. That is why the story of Joseph, hinted at in the four times that the cup is mentioned in the butler's dream, which was the beginning of Joseph's trajectory towards freedom, it enriches our understanding of Pesach and the four cups. It reminds us that the Seder is not just for those who feel the weight of physical chains, but also for those who navigate subtler forms of bondage, namely status, power, and alienation. Joseph's journey underscores a universal longing for a homeland where one can truly belong and contribute meaningfully, our land, the land of Israel. This broader theme of seeking genuine freedom and identity resonates with the historical experiences of Jewish communities across time and geographic locations. In all eras, Jews have found themselves in positions of apparent security and influence, only to confront the fragility of these standings. The narrative of Joseph and the thematic linkage to the four cups at the Seder compel us to reflect on where genuine freedom lies and where our true home is. Which brings us neatly to the miraculous nature of the present era, particularly with the establishment and flourishing of the State of Israel. It urges us to appreciate and engage with this gift of providence, to ponder deeply about where we can most authentically express our Jewish identity and build a future. Just as Joseph knew, even as his star in Egypt shone ever brighter, that his position there was tenuous and his power ephemeral, so too must we realize that what our situation really is, even if we feel safe in our country of residence, Golas Mitzrayim was not all slavery and subjugation. Much of it was spent in an era when Jews flourished and were extremely successful, but they were ultimately slaves, just in a different form, and perhaps with a lack of awareness, unlike Joseph, who understood it to the core of his being. As we lift each cup at the Seder, we must remember not only the physical liberation from Egypt, but also the spiritual journey towards true freedom and home. We must aspire, as Joseph ultimately did, to anchor our lives and legacies in the land that promises not just survival, but a true flourishing for the Jewish people, which is why we say at our Seder, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. May this not just be an empty mantra, but a direction for our collective journey. Let me end with this. There's a wonderful story of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and the man who couldn't afford wine for the Seder. The story underscores not just the importance of ensuring that those who can't afford wine for Seder must have it, and we have to help them get it, but it is also a profound lesson in sensitivity and understanding of others' needs. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was a leading figure in the world of Torah scholarship and Jewish thought in the late 19th century and early 20th century. And he was known not just for his vast knowledge, but also for his deep compassion and insight into the human condition. One day, shortly before Pesach, he was approached by a man who could only afford milk for the four cups required at the Pesach Seder. And he asked Reb Chaim whether it would be okay to do the four cups with milk instead of using wine. Reb Chaim instinctively understood that the man's needs extended far beyond just the wine. He therefore provided him not only enough money for wine, but also to buy meat for both the Sidurim, reflecting an extraordinary level of empathy and consideration. He recognized that if a person suggested milk for the four cups, a substitution that is halachically problematic due to its departure from the traditional requirements for wine, then this individual must be struggling to provide even the basic necessities for the Seder meal. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's response to the Shaila, to this halachic question, went beyond the immediate halachic question itself. It addressed the underlying human need. Seder night is all about the depth of human experience, of the human experience, and our connection, our human connection to God. Those who understand the profound godliness inside us will understand that the Seder is not just a bunch of rituals cobbled together for an annual experience, but a deeply meaningful experience that is meant to bring out our godliness even in the midst of our human existence. Wishing you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you.